All right, hello, welcome along. It's a brand new episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly, officially the greatest podcast in the history of the universe. My name's Dan. Thank you for finding us, for streaming, for downloading. This week, we'll look at one of the sweetest, but also meanest creatures on the planet. Also, you can hear why the asteroid that killed off the dinosaurs might have led to the rainforests that we know today, 66 million years later. And check this out, I've got one of the most amazing answers to one of your questions ever. I'm looking forward to getting into that. It's happening in just a sec. First, let's help some of our alien friends get back home. This is NNG.
NNG's Energy Challenge.
What the? N? What's happening? Are we under attack from the Enozoids?
Don't panic, it's just a power cut.
I'm not panicking, I'm not!
Oh, phew.
Definitely not panicking now. Everything's back where it should be. Hooray! Wow, that was seriously weird.
Well, why don't you go back onto the interweb and find out what caused everything to go dark?
Great idea!
Welcome to electquizery.com. Find out more about energy on Earth and post your questions for the Quizlet.
What happens in a power cut?
Power cuts happen when the circuit which carries electricity to your house is broken. It can happen for lots of reasons.
I'm going to say Enozoids. You just watch.
It really won't be Enozoids.
Bad weather can cause overhead cables to be damaged when rubbish and branches are carried by the wind, whilst floodwater can affect cables underground. Sometimes workmen working around a road or farmers in the countryside can accidentally cut through the cables without realising.
So it's not Enozoids from the planet Zap, all right?
Power companies do lots of things to prevent power cuts and to keep the supply going. Often they use more than one circuit to feed a populated area. This might mean that while some houses in a road have a power cut, others might be unaffected. Power companies also take care to make sure that trees near power lines are cut back. They also have teams of engineers on call to fix problems as quickly as possible.
All right. So a power cut isn't so serious, and it's nothing to do with the Enozoids. But what if everyone in the country had all their gadgets switched on at the same time and were slurping the supply dry? Could that make the supply dry out? Look, I'm going to ask, can the electricity ever run out?
It is possible to run out of electricity. In some countries, there are regular long power cuts because people need more electricity than can be supplied. In the UK, this is pretty unlikely. The trouble is, electricity can't be stored. It has to be generated as and when it's needed. And sometimes more is needed than the power stations can provide.
I think I'm panicking again.
But don't panic. The UK generally has more than enough energy for its power needs. The UK's power supply is also connected to supplies in Europe. And so if there was very high demand, the shortfall could be topped up with some of their energy. And it goes the other way too.
Oh, whew. Oh, that's nice. We help each other out.
And we can all help by only using the electricity we need. Remember to switch off lights in rooms that you're not using and don't leave gadgets on standby. It'll help to lower your electricity bill as well as helping conserve energy.
Watch out! Looks like we're gonna fuse, G!
Here it comes! Whoopee! I love a bit of fusion!
Here it comes! Woohoo!
NNG's Energy Challenge. With support from National Grid. Find out more online at funkyfly.com/energy.
It's question time on the show where you send over the science questions that are rattling around your brain. You fire them over to me on Apple Podcasts. I find them. I say hello. I try and figure out the answer for you. We've got a good range today as well. The first one is from Charlotte and Charisse, who want to know, how is candy floss made? Now, I need to be honest to start this off, by the way, Charlotte and Charisse. I don't really like candy floss. I know it hurts my teeth. You know, when they feel furry and tingly, that's what candy floss does to me. And I get bored of it really quickly. But I know that everyone else loves candy floss. So, I mean, I think I'm the weird one here. I can tell you how it's made, though. It begins as a sugar. Normal, solid sugar. Like the stuff that you'll have in your cupboards. It's then poured into a big metal bowl. You know, it looks a bit like a cake pan. And it's got a weird fan in it somehow. And it gets hot. It gets really hot. It gets almost 200 degrees C. And that melts the sugar into a liquid. And it sits right in the middle of the bowl. And when it is a liquid, it shoots out of holes that are in the middle, shoots out to the edges of this metal bowl, but it cools down very quickly when it's there. And then it becomes like a fine cobweb of sugar. Loads of silken strings made of sugar shoot out of the middle. And when this happens with loads of them, they all link together, they all cool down at the same time, and they become candy floss. Thank you very much, Charlotte and Charisse. Here's one from DogLover22, who wants to know, there are more than 22 dog lovers in the world, I reckon, so well done for getting that name. Anyway, they want to know why it is salty. Quite easy. It's because all the fluids in our body have little bits of salt in them. Now, we use this salt to make electricity that moves our muscles and it powers our brains. That's why our tears have salt in them, because there's salt all over your body. Now, a little bit is good, but too much can be pretty deadly. When there is too much salt in your body, your kidneys help get rid of it when you need a wee. They flush it out. But it's not that easy for all the animals. Sea turtles, for instance, they have loads of salt because they live in the sea. They eat jellyfish, which are pretty much just sea water, and too much of it for them is really poisonous. So they have to force themselves to cry to get rid of all the salt, which is pretty amazing and mind-blowing, but also a little bit sad at the same time. Thank you for the question. Lastly today, here's from Catalan, EEE_123. This is amazing. How is gold made? That's what they ask. Now, the answer to this is one of the coolest things I think I've ever looked up. Scientists don't think that gold is made here on Earth. They think that it was made in stars billions of years ago. They believe that something called nuclear fusion happened in the stars, which is a kind of chemical reaction. It's where new elements are made under intense pressure. Now, the gold that was made in the stars all that time ago, back when the Big Bang happened, by the way, they think that it crash-landed here on Earth in meteorites, and that the precious metals that were in those meteorites, like gold and other things, that when they hit the Earth, they sunk deep, deep down, which is why we have to go deep, we have to go down, we have to mine it to find more gold. How amazing is that? If you've got a question that you think might get an answer as cool as that one, you need to leave it as a review for me over on Apple Podcasts. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. So we've got two very special guests on to get you thinking about the future of STEM. We've got planetary scientist Susie Ember. We've got science author Maria Isabel Sanchez-Vergara on as well. She's written the brilliant series Little People, Big Dreams. And they're both here to talk to us. Susie, Issa, thank you so much for being there.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting us.
Now, I think, Susie, we'll just start with this question. How important is it that we think about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, like right now, and how can it affect our future when we're learning stuff at school?
I think about right now, we have to think about where sort of the growth of jobs are going to be in the future. And it's really hard to predict what kind of jobs will be available to us in 10 years' time, let alone 20 years' time. But what we do know is that jobs in science and engineering and maths, those kind of jobs are definitely on the increase. And we need to inspire young people now so that they're ready and prepared to enter the workforce when they grow up and have an amazing career in STEM.
Now, Issa, you've written so many of these Little People, Big Dreams books, and the series that we're talking about today is the Little Scientist ones, which focus on so many incredible people. I mean, like, you've got Charles Darwin in there, Marie Curie, Mary Anning, Ada Lovelace. How did you go about researching these fantastic people who have done so much for science in the past?
Well, it mostly depends on if they are like long-time figures, like say Ada Lovelace or Charles Darwin, who were alive like long time ago. What I do is read biographies about them and watch documentaries. But then when we go like for maybe somebody who is more closer to us, like Jane Goodall or David Attenborough, for me, the best way to research about them is mostly reading interviews or watching interviews, so I can get a better feeling of what their personality is like.
How important is it, Issa, looking back on what incredible scientists have done before and storytelling those in a really stunning way to make us wonder what we can do in the future? How important do you think that is?
Well, I think that is basic, you know. I mean, we need to have role models that don't just talk to us about princesses or put us inside a box on what we are supposed to be in the future. So when children read real stories about other children who have achieved great things, and I'm not just talking about science, but in any field, it gives them the strength and the courage to believe that they can achieve these same things as well. So the earlier you begin, the better for children to get to know all these role models.
And if we're talking about achievements and role models, I mean, you two are fantastic ones, a brilliant science author that's worked on so many different stories. And we've got a planetary scientist, Susie, very quickly, very easily. What's a planetary scientist specifically?
Great question. So I'm involved in something called space weather. And space weather is a bit like when we forecast the weather here on Earth and we try to work out whether it's going to rain tomorrow or whether it's going to be sunny. We do the same in space. We're looking at the sun all the time and we're trying to find out what kind of weather is going to come from the sun and what the impact is going to be on the planets in our solar system. And that's essentially my job.
Now, this might be a very stupid question, but what's the point in that? Like, in all fairness, I don't need to be worried if I need my brolly or if I need shorts on if I'm wandering around Jupiter, because I ain't going to get there. Why do we humans care what the weather is like on other planets?
That is not a stupid question. It's a very good one. So big space weather events don't happen very often, but if they do happen, they have really big impact on our lives on the Earth. So they can damage satellites, and we all depend on satellites every day for the things that we do. They can damage the health of astronauts that are up in space. They can damage GPS systems, which is sort of how we navigate. So there's lots of technology that we rely on today that could be impacted by space weather. So space weather at the Earth is really important. But the other planets are really interesting because I mentioned big space weather events that impact us on the Earth don't happen very often. But the other planet I study, the planet Mercury, the one nearest the sun, that sees those big space weather events every day. And so I can understand what's happening at Mercury, and then I can apply that knowledge to understand what might happen at the Earth. And that's why the other planets are important.
Now, we're chatting just a day or so after International Women's Day, and it's fantastic to have two brilliant women who are kind of commanding their field, telling us all about it, and specifically with STEM. Susie, when you were growing up, did you think when you were at school kind of being a planetary scientist was an option for you? Was it a class?
Definitely not.
How did you kind of go about doing it? And then how important is it that we have role models like yourself, like the people who are in Issa's books, that can inspire young girls that, hang on, this club is open to you as well?
I think it wasn't that I thought the club wasn't open to me. I didn't know the club existed. And so, you know, I didn't know any, I'd never heard of planetary science. I didn't know what it was. I didn't have any idea that this career could exist. And so, you know, now thinking about it, being able to share my job and the things I love about my job, you know, we build bits of spacecraft and we launch them into space to other planets. There is no cooler job than that, I think. And so just being able to share that means that there's a greater awareness of this as a career path. And also being able to share that with young people as well, and being able to sort of chat with them helps them relate to me as a scientist and a person. And so they look at me and they think, yeah, okay, that could be me. I could be part of this club. And in a sense, that's exactly what Issa is doing with the books as well. You know, it's all about presenting a story to people that they can relate to, and then they can understand what that journey looks like for them.
Issa, with the series, with Little Scientists, who that you researched, that you looked up and wrote about, really inspired you? I mean, even today, are there any standout stories that you can think of?
I'm always very interested in the personal story behind its character. So out of all the scientists and mathematicians and biologists and all the people I wrote about, I think Alan Turing is my favorite character, because his story is not just about science, but also a personal story about how terribly he was mistreated at his time for just being gay. So when there is a mixture of an interesting personal story and also a great achievement, that's when the story is like totally completed and great for me. But of course, that happens with most of the characters in the series, like Marianne as well. She didn't have a proper education and became an expert on fossils, and then her contributions were not acknowledged at the time, just because she was a woman. Or I don't know. The story of Stephen Hawking is also amazing. You know, the way from his wheelchair he could travel through the whole universe, that is really incredible too. So I just like that mix of an interesting personal story and a great achievement.
Amazing. I mean, it's the Little Scientists books in the Little People, Big Dreams series, which explores the lives of so many like pioneering people in the world of science and STEM. There are so many for you to read through those. Lastly, Susie, what's the weather going to be like on Venus this weekend? Will I need my coat?
No, it's looking quite good, actually. I think you'll be all right.
Good, lovely. Susie Ember, Maria Isabel Sanchez Vergara, thank you so much for joining us on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Now, I'm all about surprisingly deadly things in our dangerous stands at the moment. Things that you don't realise are quite as deadly as they are. This week, it's a huge surprise because they are one creature that we really want to save. Do not let the fluffy, cute red panda's looks fool you. The red panda is an animal that you do not want to get close to. It's also called a fire fox. It's a vicious predator. They're just over half a meter long with razor-sharp teeth and dagger claws that it can spring out of its hand. It can rip through flesh like butter. And they can take down animals much larger than themselves. They're found in the forests near the Himalayan mountains over in Asia. They're really tough to spot as well. They're excellent at camouflaging in trees with their reddish brown fur, their fur, their black eyes, and the small rings on their tails. Now, they can hunt in packs, but they can also go alone, stalking small creatures and birds. But if a bigger animal threatens it, the red panda can strike with immense speed and force. Now, it's called a red panda, but it's not related to the panda that you know, the black and white one. But they are really at risk. Even though this creature is deadly, there are less than 10,000 of them in the wild, which means it's on the red list of being endangered, which is a shame because the red panda is a stunning, staggering, and properly striking creature. Right, let's have a look inside your body now with our microbe best mates. This is Benny and Mal.
Benny and Mal's body teasers with support from the Nuffield Council on Bioethics.
Ah, hello again. Sorry about the ruckus. My friends Benny and Mal, you know, microbes that live at the bottom of an old test tube, are single-celled organisms that are very single-minded. Just have a listen. Benny and Mal never agree on anything.
No, I am listening. You're the one that's not listening.
So, lads, what's the hot topic today? Oi, lads, what's the hot topic?
Sorry, mate. It's no secret that Mal won't let me get a word in edgeways.
And today's topic is all about whether we should unlock the secrets inside our DNA.
So, you know what DNA is, right, Mal? Might sound a bit complicated.
Of course I know. I'm not stupid like some microbes I can mention. DNA, it's like the instruction book inside each cell.
Well done. Got it first time. I'm impressed. Right, for many, many years, doctors and scientists have been able to advise people about things by looking at their family history.
You mean like looking into a crystal ball? I see clouds clearing. I see a dog walking.
No, not like that at all. By looking at a parent's eye and hair colour, doctors can have a good guess at what colour eyes and hair their children might have. And looking at a family's medical history, they can see if a child might be likely to get a certain illness.
Oh, not quite so exciting.
Well, scientists are getting so clever these days that they can read the DNA instruction book and find out all sorts of things about you, even before you're born.
Yeah, like babies are well loud. Although you don't need to look at DNA to figure that one out, really. But screaming aside, babies don't get up to much. Can't be a lot to find out from their DNA, can there?
Wrong. Their DNA could tell us how tall the baby is likely to be, to what illnesses they might have when they're older. It's all there if you know how to decode it. Clever, huh?
I suppose so, but hang on. Babies aren't really able to say what they want. I'm not sure if I like the idea of testing someone without their permission.
Good point. On the other hand, all that information could develop new treatments which might save lives. even their own lives in the future.
Well, seeing into a possible future's all well and good, but what if the future isn't good? What if the DNA basically says, sorry kids, you're going to grow up to be 8 foot 2 and covered in spots, and there's a chance your leg will drop off? I mean, who needs or wants to know all that? Depressing.
Yeah, I do see your point. But maybe if you know you're going to end up as a spotty one-legged giant, then you can, you know, get used to the idea. Stock up on spot cream or learn how to walk on one leg. Forewarned is forearmed.
But what if it turned out not to be true? You'd worry yourself sick for years. Even scientists and machines can make mistakes.
Good point, mate. And then there's who else gets to know what the future has in store for you?
Well, my medical information is private, isn't it? What business is it of anyone else's?
Well, funnily enough, it is businesses who might like to know how you're going to turn out.
Hang on, what if you get turned down for a job because they don't want you turning into a spotty giant? Or if your DNA suggested you might not be that clever?
That reminds me of someone.
I heard that. Well, maybe schools would only bother to teach children with DNA that show they would be crazy geniuses. Or is it genie?
Think they come out of lamps?
It's a brain-busting body bamboozler for sure.
Sure is. Catch you next time.
Benny and Mal's Body Teasers, with support from the Nuffield Council on Bioethics. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Benny and Mal.
Let's get this week's Science in the News. Great Britain's electricity was the greenest that it's ever been over Easter. Sunny and windy weather led to a surge in renewable sources of energy. Wind and solar energy made up almost 80% of Britain's power over the weekend. Also, the asteroid that killed off the dinosaurs gave birth to our planet's tropical rainforests. Researchers used fossil pollen and leaves in Colombia in South America to look at how the crash changed the forests nearby. They think that after the asteroid hit the Earth, which was 12 kilometres big, by the way, when it hit the Earth 66 million years ago, it killed off a lot of the plants that were about back then, but the new ones that took over became the Amazon rainforest and many others that we have today. And finally, a Bronze Age stone that's been found might be the oldest three-dimensional map in Europe. It's a slab of stone. It's about 4 metres big. It was found in France back in 2014. Archaeologists have studied the patterns on the stone, which is 4,000 years old, and they say that it's a map of Western Brittany, which is another area in France, and that would make it one of the oldest known maps ever. And that is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. If you've got something sciencey that you want answered, you need to leave it as a review for me over on Apple Podcasts. Find the podcast there. Leave your name. Give us 5 stars so I can say hello. That'll make it easier for me to see. While you are there, you can hear loads more of the brilliant podcasts that we make for you on Fun Kids. You can also find them on Google, on Spotify. They're on the free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids, we're a children's radio station from the UK. You can hear us all over the country on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and at funkidslive.com.